well, we'll get 51, in chapter 51, we'll get that here. All right, now when he said, look to Abraham your father when he was but one, I called him and blessed him and made him many. For Jehovah had comforted Zion, he had comforted all her waste places. Now, I've given you assurance of what I will do. I think, class, that that's a good lesson for us. Sometimes we get a little discouraged. Just a few of us. Just a few of us. I think just a very few real saints in this country in which we live. I think a lot of religious folks. But when it comes right down to real faithful Christians, I don't think there are very many. But I know one thing. I know if those few will take God at His word and be faithful to Him, that there's no telling what God can do with that few. Now, He took Abraham and He built a great nation. He took Jesus Christ and 12 apostles and sent them out and changed the thoughts of the world. Now, God can do that then. Can't He do it now? I think so. I know it's a different situation. I know it's more difficult. And yet, we're not faced with some of the things they were faced with. But I think one of the weaknesses of us all is a lack of faith in God's ability to do with a little. To take an acorn and from that acorn make a great strong oak. Take one man, Abraham, and make a great nation. Take Jesus and a few apostles and make a great impression upon the whole world here. Am I right or wrong? I think I'm right. And I think I lack that faith. I think you lack it. We're kind of like Abraham was. God told him, He said, I'm going to make you a great nation out yonder. Well, he believed that. But when he came right down into Egypt there, and Pharaoh said, well, took it to be his wife, and he was afraid. Well, when it come to an immediate situation, he didn't have any faith. When it comes something way out yonder, he had faith. When it comes to being raised from the dead and given a place in heaven, we believe that, don't we? When it comes to meeting an immediate situation right now, I lack a little faith there sometimes. I think that's a good point to remember. Well, I'll move on. But I'm going to redeem you now. I've spoken it as though it were already done here. God is speaking of things that are not as though they are. And Isaiah said that several times. All right, now he calls as if already done. Attend unto me, O my people, and give ear unto me, O my nation. And those up in verse 1, hearken to me. Here in the verse 4, attend unto me, O my people, and give ear unto me, O my nation. Now he's talking to the people now. For a law shall go forth from me, and I will establish my justice for a light of the peoples. Now that's plural. Now notice that distinction between the people and the peoples. The people are his people. The peoples are the heathen, the Gentiles, the nations. Right? For a light of the peoples. My righteousness is near. My salvation is gone forth. And that salvation is deliverance from sin. Gone forth. And mine arm shall judge the peoples. The isle shall wait for me. And on mine arm shall they trust. All right, now listen to me. Attend unto me. Here's what I'm promising. Here's what I'll do. Now do you have faith? I can do it and will do it. Now I know what verse 6. Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look upon the earth beneath. For the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner. But my salvation shall be forever, and my righteousness shall not be abolished. Now what are you talking about there? He's talking about the destruction of the physical nation of the Jews. Alright, now, as the heavens are going to pass away, and your earth is going to pass away. And the heavens and the earth of the Jews passed away when they passed away as a nation. He's not talking about the final judgment there at all. Any more than he was in chapter 31 when he talked about the Gentiles, the nations, and used a very similar phrase there. Their heavens would pass away and their earth. So also were the Jews, my people. It's going to pass away from you. Now notice for the hearken unto me. Now here he says, hearken unto me. Now he said, attend unto me. Now again he says, hearken. What are you doing? You're trying to get the attention of the people. Listen to me. Here's what I'm saying to you. I want to encourage you in this matter. Right now, notice. Hearken unto me, you that know righteousness, the people in whose heart is my law. That is, to know God is to practice it, to practice righteousness. And in my heart is my law. Fear ye not the reproach of men, neither be dismayed at their revilings. For the moth shall eat them up like a garment, and the worm shall eat them like wool. But my righteousness shall be forever, my salvation unto all generations. So you see, he's not talking about the end of the world, or the end of the final end of the world. He was talking about in the New Testament. He's talking about the end of the world for the Jewish nation. Then righteousness and salvation will then continue to all generations. That'll be for those who follow the passing of the old order. Now that's discussed more clearly in the 65th chapter, where God said, I create new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Well, we'll leave that to talk about it when we come to it. Now, I want to note down in verse 16, we come back to that thought, but let me move on now.
It's my clock stopped a while ago.
Alright, now let's move on here. Awake, awake. Put on strength, O arm of Jehovah. Awake, as in the days of old. Now, back here when he says, attention and hearken, that's to the people. Now, here is an appeal to Jehovah, and then his reply down in verse about 16. But here's the appeal to Jehovah. Now, awake, Lord. Tear this out. Fulfill it. Restore Zion. Give us that which you are promising here. O arm of Jehovah, awake as in the days of old, the generations of ancient times. Is it not thou that cut Rahab in pieces, that didst pierce the monster? Now Rahab, the word meant arrogant, or the arrogant one, arrogance. Job used it. We've had it back here earlier in the 30th chapter and verse 7. But God used the word of Egypt. Egypt was the great monster that lived in the Nile River. And so, very arrogant, very proud. So, if he used the word Rahab of Egypt, the monster there, is it not thou that driest up the sea, the water of the great deep, and madest the depths of the sea a way for the redeemed to pass over? And the ransomed of Jehovah shall return, and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. Now, I think he's talking about the return from Babylon here. We have an identically same expression back in the 35th chapter and verse 8. And a highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. It shall be the unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for the redeemed. The wayfaring man, yea, fool shall not pass therein. And drop down to verse 9. But the redeemed shall walk therein. So it's a place for the ransomed of Jehovah. Not the same language in there, where he said it, both of them there. So, no, I guess it's the last verse 9. But the redeemed shall walk there. I think you have about that same here. And be for the redeemed here. And joy and gladness shall be on their hearts. Now, in Isaiah 35, he's talking about the messianic period. Here he's talking about the return from Babylon. God is able to bring back his remnant from Babylon and carry out and consummate his eternal purpose, the purpose and plan that he's had all the time. Right? I am he that comforteth you. Who art thou that thou art afraid of man that shall die, and of the son of man that shall be made as grass? Now, son of man there is the offspring of man. So, why are you afraid? If I am God, if I'm the God of the power that I claim and have expressed and manifested in times going by, just look back. When he gave the Lord Sinai, when they were in the battle, when he opened the Red Sea and they passed by on dry land, when in the battle, when Joshua led them in the battle against the Gentiles there, and night was coming on, and he called upon God to lengthen the day. God lengthened the day, that long day, and he completed the body. Now, God is able to do things like that. He doesn't have to do it, but he's still able to carry out his purpose in his way. And this, I think, is the great lesson the people needed at that time. That's the great lesson that the people of God need today. It's faith in God. Too much faith in trivial things, frivolities. I've been reading a number of articles lately by different preachers and different writers on preachers of today, and they're concerned more for pleasing the multitude and having a good name and a good reputation, a backslapping organized, or they're just preaching the Word of God. So often I hear a wonderful speaker. And what does he say? Paul was not a good speaker. Paul himself said that. He said he's mean of speech. Now, you're not a good speaker. Moses said, I'm not eloquent. God didn't need an eloquent man. He had a man that could do what Moses could do. He didn't need a fluent, fiery speaker. He needed an apostle Paul. A man to be true to the truth under every circumstance in life. What does he need today? He just needs men that will preach the word, teach the word without respect of persons. Try to build faith in the hearts of people rather than to build numbers and a building and all that sort of thing. I think our preaching today, generally speaking, has become maybe too much imitation of Jim Baker and some of those other fellows there. What's that other one's name? All the rest of them there. Haven't been in the news more than the other one, so I should not call his name. But anyhow, maybe we've had that kind of an idea. I've wondered in the last few years if the movie and the television fellows haven't had more influence on preachers than they would have written it. It's a matter of, I want to be popular, I want to hope that I'm not blank. Don't misunderstand, I'm not making a blank of that. I'm just simply asking or raising the question from what I'm reading, what I'm hearing. I don't know. I don't hear a lot of them. The ones I know are good men. The rest of them I don't associate with much. Right. They move with their grass and has forsaken Jehovah thy name. What he's saying is, I am he that comforteth you, and has forgotten Jehovah thy maker that stretcheth forth the heavens and laid the foundations of the earth, and feareth continually all the day because of the fury of the oppressor, when he maketh ready to destroy. Now let me read that again. I missed my point. Who art thou? Thou art afraid of man. Yeah, the question, now who are you afraid of? What are you worth to me if you're afraid of these things? What are we worth if we're afraid of failing? Afraid of going down in defeat, of God not helping you? The captive exile shall speedily be loosed, and he shall not die and go down into the pit, neither shall his bread fail. For I am Jehovah thy God, who stirreth up the sea, so that the waves thou roar. Jehovah of hosts is his name. Now notice, now I put my words in thy mouth, and I cover thee in the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens, and lay the foundation of the earth, and say unto Zion, thou art my people. Now connect that back here with verse 6 and 7. Verse 6. Lift up your eyes to the heavens, and look upon the earth beneath. For the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner. But my salvation shall be forever, and my righteousness shall not be abolished. Now, then over here in verse 6, now he says here what all he's going to do up here, and the kind of people he wants and his ability. Now I put my words in thy mouth, and they have covered thee in the shadow, and have covered thee in the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens and lay the foundation of the earth, and say unto Zion, thou art my people. I'm holding you, the servant, in his hand, through whom he's going to do all of this. And you, Zion, you're in my hand. And so I'm going to make Zion the glory that I intended to. So what is the point? The point is that the old order shall pass away here in verse 6. Heavens and the earth of the old Jewish system would be gone. And when a nation destroyed, what happened to its heavens and earth? Gone, isn't it? Sure is. So use the same language of Babylon back in the 13th chapter. Same of the nation in chapter 31. Same of Judah here, his people. in chapter 34, 51, yes. And again in chapter 65, we'll come to that. All right. Now, awake, awake. Stand up, O Jerusalem, that hath drunk at the hand of Jehovah the cup of his wrath. Thou hast drunk in the bowl of the cup of staggering and drained it. Now notice, as though, so stand up, awake, awake, stand up. Here now is Zion, the wife, in a drunken stupor, fallen down, drunk. Drunk on the wine of the wrath of God. God brought her low. It's a picture. Not a beautiful picture, but at least a telling picture. Now he said, I gave the cup of staggering, and you drained it. There is none to guide her among all the sons whom she has brought forth. Neither as the any that taketh her by the hand among all the sons that she had brought up. None of her children who will take her by the hand and lift her up and lead her in the right way. So now you get the picture. We live in a land in which you can get that picture. There's a drunken mother, drunken wife, and here she's lying down drunk, can't get up, and here she doesn't have a son. Will come along and got enough interest to lift and help her get up, get back on the right track. Well, they're too much like she is. That's a picture of that, ugly one. Now, these two things have befallen thee. Who shall bemoan thee? Desolation and destruction, and the famine and the sword. Now, these are the two things that have brought you low. But what were these? These were the cup of the wine of the wrath of God. He put that cup, Jeremiah says, he put that cup in the hand of Babylon. And Zion was forced to drink it, being brought very low in the picture, brought into captivity. Now then, lying there helpless as it were, none to lead her back. But God is going to bring back a few. Now notice further, how shall I comfort thee? Thy sons have fainted, they lie at the head of all the streets. As an antelope in a net. They are full of the wrath of Jehovah, the rebuke of thy God. I hear your children there at the head of the gates, head of the street. I don't know what that means. There are two meanings of that. It could be they were at the head of the streets there trying to get out and escape and get away. Or it could be that they were there dying to try to protect the city. But we never, either way, why, they are doomed. They are like an antelope in a net. They are doomed. Therefore, hear now this, thou afflicted and drunken, but not with wine. Not drunk on wine, but you're drunk. You're drunk on the wine of the wrath of God Almighty. That's an expression you have a number of times. Thus saith thy Lord Jehovah, thy God that pleaded the cause of his people. Behold, I've taken out of thy hand the cup of staggering, even the bowl of the cup of my wrath. Thou shalt no more drink it again. And I will put it into the hand of them that afflict thee, that have said to thy soul, bow down, that we may go over. And thou hast laid thy back as the ground and as the street to them that go over. Now I'm going to take this cup of the wine of wrath out of your hand, and I'm going to put it in the hand of the king of Babylon. I'm going to give it to him. He's going to drink of it. I'm not sure I remember where that passage is. I think I do. I think so in chapter 51. But I'm not sure. Doesn't matter. I don't need to read it. But at any rate, he was going to take this cup now and give it to Babylon. What does that mean? That means then that he'll bring Babylon low. The wine of his wrath will now bring Babylon down, who brought you into the captivity. So it's rather a vivid analogy, isn't it, in picture there, or whatever you want to call it there, that here then, here's the mother here that says that God's forsaken her, and it doesn't even concern with her. Here in the 50th chapter, the servant speaks, the prophet here, he's going to come speaking the word of God, giving himself to lead them out. Chapter 51, here's a word of encouragement now, to prostrate Zion. As she's lying there in captivity, as a drunken wife, a drunken mother. Not a son to come along and lift her up and help her out. But God's going to do that. I'm going to take the cup of the wine of wrath out of your hand. I'm going to put it in the hand of Babylon. I'm going to make Babylon drunk on it and bring them down to destruction. Now this is what God, he's a name Babylon after that. I forget what chapter, what 48 or 9. Last time Babylon was named, but she's still in the picture in a number of these cases. You have a question over our lesson tonight? Well, I think I about covered it about right. I'm sorry I didn't get this on tape, but I didn't. Anyhow, we'll next time we'll take chapter 52 and 53. And 53 really begins with verse 13. So the 52nd is calling upon Zion to awake and to strengthen herself and all that and to be redeemed. We'll get to that next time. No question? Well, we'll let the class be excused right at that point.